Welcome to another edition of A Better You with Coach Caroline Miller. I am your host, Coach Caroline Miller, and today I'm talking to Angela Duckworth, and I'm just incredibly excited about this because I was exposed to Angela's work when I was a student at MAP at Penn last year, studying for my master's in applied positive psychology. And this work on grit is so interesting, so cutting edge, and thank you, Angela, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Let's jump right into it because we only have 15 minutes. And could you please explain to our listeners here what it is about grit that is so meaningful in terms of determining psychological mindset, and how does it fit in with positive psychology?
Sure. You know, well, let me start with the definition. We define grit as perseverance and passion for very long-term goals. And by very long-term, we mean for adults, you know, on the order of years, you know, even decades. So we think of this quality, well, we thought about this quality, first just when we considered anecdotally the people who we knew as peers who were the top of their fields. Marty Seligman and I got together and we thought, you know, who are the top lawyers that we know, the top academics, the top musicians, the top authors, and what do they have in common? So obviously these are all talented people. They seem to, you know, learn and do better than others for the same amount of effort, perhaps. But they also seem to share this other quality, which is just really sticking with things and being, I guess, the opposite of a dilettante. So, you know, how this fits into the broader positive psychology framework is if you consider the flourishing life to be both a happy and moral life, but also a productive and accomplished life, I think this is where grit has its natural home. Since defining the construct, it went about and studied it in a variety of very high-achieving populations, and we found that, indeed, our intuitions were correct, that if you look at the very high achievers in a given field, they are almost always gritty.
That is so interesting to me. Tell me a little bit about how you came up with the grit scale that can be accessed for free on the Authentic Happiness website.
We discussed with a number of individuals who were at the top of their field, so moving beyond a conversation between Marty and myself to informal interviews with lawyers and academics and artists, we simply asked them to describe the people that they knew who were really excellent at what they did. And from that, we came up with a number of statements. Actually, we started off with 37 statements and doing studies to see which of these statements actually correlated best with success. We narrowed it down to what's on the website now, which is, I think, the current version that they have now, I think, should be about 24 items. And there are two factors on the original grit scale. One describes, you know, how consistently your interests are over time. And the other scale describes how persevering you are in the face of adversity or failure. So we distinguish between those two, but they're obviously related. And in a more recent version, we also have an ambition scale.
An ambition scale, okay. And so tell me a little bit about if someone takes the grit scale and they come up with a score of about, let's say, 3, because it's from 1 to 5, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So my clients go and they take it and they come back and they say, well, Caroline, my score is a 3. Tell me where that falls in terms of the general population. Is a 3 a good score?
Well, one thing to know about the population in general is that it matters how old you are. So we find that people get grittier as they get older. Well, that's one possibility. The other possibility is that people who are born in the 60s or 70s actually just are grittier than even the same, than the people who are, you know, born in later decades from some kind of generational effect. You know, the me generation versus the greatest generation. I mean, so why it is that we observe older participants or subjects saying that they're grittier is an interesting question, but it's certainly true that being average for, you know, 65-year-olds is different from being average for, you know, 35-year-olds. In our populations, we find that, for example, cadets at West Point tend to be very high. I mean, they're closer to like 3.75 on average. And whereas younger people might have an average of something like 3.2 who are, you know, not at West Point. So it not only matters how old you are, but, you know, the kind of population you want to compare yourself to. We should be coming out with a paper soon that actually has norms divided by age, but that hasn't been published.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit more about the West Point cadets, what you discovered, what does GRIT predict about the West Point cadets, and then also tell me a little bit about what you found with the National Spelling Bee contestants in GRIT.
Sure. We did a study at West Point. Actually, we've done it now for 3 years in a row, and every year we find the same results, which is assuring to us that it's not just a fluke. Every year we have the cadets take the GRIT scale on the second day of their arrival to West Point. Now, at West Point, they begin the first year not in the fall, but in the summer. The cadets arrive in July, and it's what they call Beast Barracks. And the title is apt because, you know, basically these cadets are put through sort of every kind of mental, physical, and psychological hardship. And they have a substantial dropout rate during that first summer. And what we looked for in that study is, you know, could GRIT predict who would stay at West Point until the fall and who would drop out? And indeed, GRIT was actually a phenomenal predictor of retention. And in fact, better than any of the conventional predictors that West Point had been using to that point. So that's an interesting piece of evidence. A negative finding in that study was that GRIT was predictive of GPA during the year, but not more predictive than conventional predictors like SAT and high school rank. And our interpretation of these findings is as follows. We feel like, you know, Woody Allen said once, you know, 80% of life, success in life is showing up. But if you only sort of measure the variables that actually predict among the the few people who do show up, then you're actually not going to get that very important piece, which is like who shows up at all. So GRIT in the West Point study seemed to be predicting, you know, who actually gets to class in the fall. It may not predict who among those who are in class in the fall, you know, get a 3.9 versus a 3.8, but it does show who kind of sticks around. Another quote I have by someone not as famous as Woody Allen, but just a friend of mine, says, you know, that success is an attrition, a war of attrition, and if you just stick around long enough in something, you'll see that a lot of people drop out and you'll be there still standing. So I think that was sort of our major insight into what GRIT does and doesn't predict from that particular investigation. And you had mentioned a separate study, the National Spelling Bee study. Well, like so many people, we had seen that excellent documentary Spellbound on the spellers in the National Spelling Bee quite a few years ago. And we approached the organizers of that competition and asked them the question, do you know why some children do so much better than others? And, you know, they hadn't actually done any systematic investigation. So we mailed home GRIT questionnaires as well as some other measures to all of the finalists in the 2005 Spelling Bee. And we received actually most of them back. It turns out that, you know, 7 to 12-year-olds will do just about anything for Amazon.com credit.
Oh, that's great.
Good insight if you ever need to, you know, get a 12-year-old on your side.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were a wonderful group of kids, and they filled out this questionnaire, and then we waited until they actually performed in the spelling bee. And like so many others, you know, we watched it on TV, on ESPN, and it turns out that GRIT was an excellent predictor of your final rank in that competition. And it turns out that IQ, we actually also gave these kids an IQ test over the phone, was also predictive. But interestingly, IQ and GRIT were not related at all. And we find this over and over again in our research that, you know, it's not that the smarter people are also grittier. They seem to be actually unrelated and sometimes even inversely related, whereas where you find the slightly more intelligent people are actually less gritty. So that's an optimistic note for us because, you know, there is not a lot you can do to change your IQ. But there may be some things that you can do to change your GRIT.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to end with here, which is, you know, what is a GRIT intervention? How do you raise your GRIT score?
You know, this is a question that we're always asked, and you know, we say that we think you can raise GRIT more than raise IQ because IQ is very genetically determined, and most personality traits, and we're assuming GRIT would be like this too, is less genetically determined than IQ, and that gives you just a little more hope because, of course, you know, nobody's going to be going around, at least from the psychology end, changing genes. So the question of exactly what you would do, on the other hand, is still an open one. You know, we talked to the people at West Point about what they do because, you know, yes, we found that grit was a predictor of who stays there, but even so, we have the suspicion that an institution like West Point does make the cadets who stick around grittier than they were when they came in. And they thought that was true, too. I mean, I think one possibility we're working on right now is that when you are in a particular culture, a school culture, a work culture, that actually has profound influence on you, in part because of what let's call the social multiplier effect. Now, this is a term that's not our own invention, but a term coined by James Flynn, who is a psychologist and actually a political economist in Australia. And the heart of the notion of social multiplication is as follows. When you change something about yourself, I think of it in terms of, for example, being generous. So if one person at work starts, you know, bringing in cookies to share with other people, you know, that may have an effect on other people, ripple effect, where, you know, other people might think, like, oh, actually, you know, that was such a good idea. That made me feel good. You know, I'm going to bring in breakfast for everybody the next day. And then, you know, you start to have this culture where, you know, then you make other people feel grateful and then also feel generous. And the effect multiplies itself as opposed to, you know, petering out. It actually gets amplified. And we're wondering whether something like grit could also have that same effect in a culture, for example, like West Point, when people really are, you know, all around, you know, speaking about determination, exercising determination, sticking with things even though it's very hard, and then that actually through a social multiplier effect becomes more and more reinforced. So my suspicion is that individual interventions to make, you know, individuals grittier may have less of an effect than group interventions or cultural interventions where you make an entire group of people grittier.
Now, is that similar to emotional contagion theory?
Emotional contagion theory is in, you know, it's not within my research bailiwick, but so far as I can understand it, you know, there are also in emotional contagion, if somebody smiles at you, there are reflexive non-conscious processes by which you smile back. And emotional contagion operates both on the sort of conscious behavior level and then also these sort of it's like when somebody yawns and you yawn, you know, that it's an automatic, reflexive, like, you know, physiological thing that happens. So I think it's a little bit different from that, although I do think that in the emotional contagion literature, you will read about, you know, the fact that, you know, when you come to work and you're having a good day or a bad day, that certainly affects other people, which, of course, ricochets back because, you know, so I think it has in common that dynamic, but just that emotional contagion has some other sort of reflexive automatic processes to it as well.
Great. Well, this is exactly what I wanted to cover, and I know you need to go. Last word is simply, where can someone go to learn more about grit?
Let's see. You had mentioned that on the Authentic Happiness website, they can take the grit scale. So that's one starting point. We were the cover story in Psychology Today several issues back, but it's a nice summary, actually. It's a pretty accurate summary of what we think grit is, and the author actually went on and extended our research findings to, you know, polling some other prominent psychologists in the field of motivation and goal attainment. So I think that was actually useful. Then finally, you know, we'll have a paper out in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology in 2007 from a more academic standpoint summarizing this work. And we always do try to, you know, keep the positive psychology community abreast of sort of breaking developments through the positive psychology websites. You mentioned Authentic Happiness. There's also, I think, Reflective Learning and then just positivepsychology.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. This concludes our podcast with Angela Duckworth, and please visit my website, www.carolinemiller.com. Click on the blinking podcast link to learn more about today's guest. Again, Angela Duckworth, thank you very, very much for being with us. And until next time, this is Coach Caroline wishing you a happy and proactive day.